Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
And, you know, we say it every day. Today, I really mean it.
Are you sure, Tom? Because I felt like you really meant it before, and I guess you hadn't.
No, I never meant it before until this moment. This is the first time.
This is a pretty big deal, then.
It's about time I came clean.
Tom finally feels like we should all have a good
day. You know, they say fake it till you make it. That's what was going on.
Well, I appreciate your honesty.
Yeah, thank you. It's a big step for me to finally be honest for the first time as well. Also, my name's not Tom. All right. Before we get too far into the weeds, let's do a show. Here we go. In 3, 2. Daily Tech News Show is made possible by you, whose ears I am inside right now. Thanks to all of you, including Dan Crafton, Tim Ashman, Johnny Hernandez, and brand new patrons Michael and Arthur.
Yay!
Welcome. On this episode of DTNS, why EVs have trouble in the cold, they don't just need a blanket, what Google changed in response to EU law, and Instagram tries to become your messaging platform. Stop it, Instagram. This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, March 5th, 2024, in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Animal House, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
March 5th, Cinco de...
Cinco de Marzo.
Marzo.
De Marzo.
Is it Marzo?
Yeah, Marzo. I can't remember now. Lo siento. Let's start with the quick hits then.
I think it's Martes. No, that's Tuesday. Anyway, Windows Central's Zach Bowden says his sources say Microsoft will make a hardware announcement on March 21st. Among the announcements Bowden expects are an OLED Surface Pro 10 and a Surface Laptop 6 with Intel Core Ultra or Snapdragon 8 Elite chips, so both Intel and ARM versions. Let's check back on the 21st and see how well Mr. Bowden did.
Yes, let's do. On 21 de marzo, as Roger and JPEG have said. China smartphone sales continue to plunge along with declines in the wider economy there. Counterpoint Research estimates sales fell 7% in the first 6 weeks of 2024, year over year. Oppo fell the most, dropping from 70% of the market last year to 13% now. Apple's share of the market fell from 19% to 16%. You're going to see a 24% drop in unit sales in all the headlines, but the market share is still 16%, which dropped from 19 to 16. Don't let that mislead you. It's still not good, though. Only Honor and Huawei gained market share, with Honor up from 15 to 16%, and Huawei jumping on the strength of the Mate 60 from 9% all the way to 17%. That puts it in second place to Vivo, which held on to an 18% share, down just from 19%. In other market share news, StatCounter estimates that 4.03% of the desktop user market was running Linux at the end of February. Linux marked 3% market share last June, which it took 30 years to get to. Just 8 months later, we got 4%. Just 46% more until we can declare it the year of the Linux desktop.
There you go. It's right around the corner. Be careful when you join a video conference, especially if you're talking about military secrets. And don't forget your VPN. Last week, Russia's RT network aired a recording of a WebEx meeting by German Luftwaffe, that's the Air Force officials. They discussed sensitive topics like weapon deliveries to Ukraine and potential stickers on a bridge in Crimea. It was a specially certified instance of WebEx with servers in Germany, but one member of the call connected insecurely from Singapore. An air show taking place there had made it a target for Russian surveillance. The call was probably caught in a broad sweep for insecure communication.
I'm going to guess VPN. I'm going to guess he didn't put his VPN on. I don't know. I don't know for sure, but that's what it feels like. Federico Vitici was looking for the perfect keyboard to use with the Apple Vision Pro, and he ended up deciding that the perfect keyboard was to rip the display off his MacBook Air. Well, he didn't rip it. He just removed it. He removed it very carefully. It looks nice. It had the advantages of being lighter than a laptop with a display and one piece instead of a separate keyboard and trackpad, as he was considering otherwise. But when he wasn't using the Apple Vision Pro, it had the downside of no longer having the display. So he wisely connected an iPad with a universal control and sidecar active. And then was like, well, all I need to do now is create a way to mount the iPad to the headless MacBook Air in a way that I can easily remove it. And now he's got a MacBook with a removable screen that works perfectly with the Apple Vision Pro. You can go check it out at macstories.net.
Yeah, for anybody who isn't watching the video version, this looks really nice. You know, when I first read this, I was like, oh, he's tearing things apart. This is just a mess. Oh, it looks really nice. Federico is a good dude. Follow him on X. OpenAI has announced that ChatGPT can now read its answers out loud on its web and mobile versions with a feature called Read Aloud. Users have been able to directly ask the chatbot prompts without typing ever since the voice chat feature launched last September. Read Aloud is now available for GPT 3.5 and GPT 4 and can speak 37 languages, auto-detecting the language of the text that it's reading.
That is correct, Sarah. You can hear it right now. All right, Google announced a set of changes meant to bring its products and services in compliance with the European Union's Digital Markets Act by Thursday, March 7th. That's the deadline. Products deemed subject to the DMA's provisions are Google Maps, Google Play, the store, Google Shopping, Google Ads, Chrome, Android, Google Search, and YouTube. That also may be a list of all the things Google hasn't killed or changed its name in the past 7 years. Congrats, residents of the European Economic Area. You now have more consent screens than ever before. Yay.
Yay. Google will no longer link personal data across user accounts of some products for personalization of ads. Users will have to link them in settings, though Google says it may prompt users with banners in certain cases.
Yes, more banners. Browser and search choice screens are coming to Android. You'll get those by Thursday. So when you're setting up Android, it'll say, what browser would you like? Choose from these options. What search would you like? Choose from these options. And I'm sure there'll be lots of think pieces written about how you get on those option lists. Also, it's coming to Chrome for desktop and iOS later. It's not coming right away, but it's in the works. And so that's good enough to meet the requirements. When it does come, when you launch Chrome for the first time, it will ask you if you want to choose another browser, I guess, and also ask you which search engine you want.
Starting on March 6th, Google Play app developers can directly point European Union users outside the app for promotional deals. Mostly, this means app developers can promote a cheaper payment or subscription from them directly. This reduces what they have to share with Google.
Yeah, if you're confused on that one, you could do this in the Google Play, according to the Google Play rules before, but it wasn't directly. There were limits on how you could do it. Now you can just say like, hey, get this for cheaper. Click here and it'll take you, you know, off site. That goes along with, you know, looser rules around third-party apps, third-party app stores and all that. Google will also launch a data portability API so that developers can make it easy for users to switch between competing services. This isn't really something that is so much required for Google to do as it is for apps to do. So TikTok, for instance, has to comply with the DMA by allowing you to export your data. I don't know where else you would take it. Reels, Snapchat. I really don't know, but they have to do it, so they're doing it. So these APIs will allow developers to do that. And even if you're not required to do it, you can do it. So that portability API is coming for developers.
Google's also providing advertisers tools to help them get consent from users to target them for ads.
More pop-ups. Yay. And this list adds to previously announced changes like listing more third-party non-paying search services in tiles when you do a search. They're removing some of their own tools like Google Flights. So there's a lot here that they are required to do, and they're doing it. They're doing it less contentiously than Apple, which is kind of digging in its heels and doing the least it thinks it can justify. It's a lot of work, no matter what, whether you're digging in your heels or doing what Google's doing here. Sarah, do you think it's going to have any effect? Like, is this actually going to make the European tech landscape more competitive? That's the point. That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, I honestly, going through all of this, I doubt the experience is going to change for the end user all that much. I mean, maybe it's sort of like, oh yeah, where'd Google Flights go? Okay, I'll use something else. Mm-hmm. Or yeah, there's a, you know, a larger banner that a developer has now on a page when I can save some money by paying the developer directly rather than going through the Google Play Store. I also, that one specifically, I wonder, it's like, why would anyone not want to save money? So if developers weren't allowed to do that before, I get it.
Yeah.
If, you know, if you sort of had restrictions on how you could, you know, the language you could use or colors or, you know, size, text, all that stuff, I get it. If you can just sort of say like, okay, pay here, but if you want the better experience, pay this other way, everyone is going to do that, right? That would be, I guess, a big difference, unless you're just a person who's like, I don't care about €3 difference and I feel lazy right now and I'm just going to stay inside.
That's going to be more people than you might expect who are like, you know what? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I trust Google to handle my money, which, you know, you can argue whether they should or not, but somebody may be sure. Like, I pay Google a lot of stuff and they seem to be doing fine with it. I don't know this app, so I want to pay them, but I don't feel comfortable. I think a lot of it is what you said. Like, people are just like, I don't know. It seems like a lot of work to go off into a browser and fill something out. So the Google Pay experience may be a little smoother. There will be people. It'll be interesting to see what that percentage is, because you're right. It is more rational to jump through the hoops and save a few euros. I don't think this is really going to change the landscape, though. I don't think it's going to make, you know, an explosion of innovation where companies finally feel they can compete with Google and Apple and TikTok and Amazon. If anything, it might have the opposite effect of regulatory capture, where companies are like, ooh, if we get big enough, that's a lot of work. It's a lot of expense that we have to do, and only the big folks can actually afford to do it. I don't disagree with the principle of any of these rules. I just don't know if they're going to have the effect they're intended to have.
Yeah. If there is some big effect on anyone listening who this applies to, do let us know. But I'm with you. These feel like incremental changes for the better. Sure. None of this seems like it's for the worse.
Some of it's going to be a hassle. That's the only downside, right? Is people are going to get tired of seeing pop-ups and being asked things. People don't like to be asked to make choices. They really don't.
I hate being crippled by choice personally.
Yeah.
What I was not able to choose to do was log into Facebook, Instagram, Threads, or my MetaQuest this morning because the Meta had a big old outage.
Wow, I hadn't heard everyone complain about it, Sarah.
Started around 10 a.m. Eastern Time Tuesday, which is usually right about the time I sit in front of my computer for the first time. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, it's down, whatever. We're not talking about that today, though, because outages happen. By the time you're listening to this, it's over or very over. You might be listening to this episode next week. Interesting. Exactly. I had already forgotten. Otis looked at his Instagram this morning. Right. It all worked out fine. So
good for him.
All is well. But speaking of Instagram, the company announced a new feature this week allowing users to edit direct messages, or DMs as the kids say, up to 15 minutes after sending them. Users can also get the option to pin up to 3 messaging threads to the top of their inbox. Maybe you talk to somebody there all the time and, you know, you just kind of want to put it up at the top. To edit a message, you need to press and hold it, then choose edit from the drop-down menu. It's pretty cut and dry. Messaging apps do this now. Once you edit the message, the purple text bubble will have an edited label on top of it to notify the other person that something has changed here. So this is very similar to some the new features of iMessage, which I do use the edit tool here and there, and I see other people doing it as well. I've never been in a situation where I'm like, ooh, I gotcha. You know, I saw what you did before you changed the message. But I'm also not having like cray-cray conversations these days. And I'm not doing that in Instagram either. But I do a fair amount of direct messaging through Instagram. I mentioned my dog's account, which I help manage because I'm his mother. I have my own. Just the other day, somebody messaged me in there and I was sort of like, where'd this come from? And he said, well, you liked my photo that I posted the other day and I was thinking of you. I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Of course. Maybe you don't even have my phone number anymore. I hadn't talked to him in years. But the whole editing messages thing is, it's funny because you have that camp of people saying, oh, you know, oh, you know, the now we're going to have to do all these screenshots to make sure that, you know, that crazy DM that gets changed later, you know, still, you know, stays somewhere for posterity. That probably is going to happen as it does with all these messaging apps. But I think this is a good thing. I, you know, for anybody who said, hey, Twitter, give me an edit button. It's like, it's all the same idea. It's, oh, I made a stupid typo, or, you know, that sentence could have been worded differently, or, you know, I just want to take it back. You know, yeah. all that stuff is just, those are nice features to me.
I agree that, and I want to point out before I say that the next thing I'm going to say that edit features are necessary and they are rarely abused. I mean, we've had edit features on Facebook through its entire run practically. And if anything gets abused, it's something on Facebook. And no one is out there with horror stories about, oh, somebody tricked me by posting a message and then editing it. Like, it gets even less of an issue when you're talking about direct messages. And like, what are you doing saying, hey, would you like to eat Mexican food? And then when the person says yes, you like edit it to say Chinese food and go, ha, you said yes. Now we have to go. Like what are you doing that would really like cause a problem with people? I'm sure you're coming up with a scenario right now, but it just doesn't happen that often. So I think after 10, 15 years of edit buttons in very highly used situations, we can agree that it's not abused in the amount that causes it to be something we shouldn't have. And I think it's fine. I'm more fascinated that I like you, Sarah, I'm getting more messages on Instagram these days. I have a bigger problem. I don't have a problem with the edit button. I have a bigger problem with why are we have so many different ways to message each other? Like I have to keep track of 20 different things now.
Yeah. I've got a, I just downloaded WhatsApp for macOS. Didn't even know there was an app, because I've got a friend who she's capable of using messages. She has an iPhone, but she lives in Amsterdam. Uh-huh. And WhatsApp is just like where all her other friends are. And
sure.
So she's just like, Sarah, is it the end of the world to use this? It's like so much easier for me. And I'm like, no, it's not the end of the world at all. But now I got to make sure those notifications are on or I'm going to miss your message. But yeah, there's that. There's Facebook messages. I don't know. I'm not using Messenger all that much lately on Facebook, but I used to use it quite a bit. Instagram, DMs, and of course, you know, yeah. Anything social networky. The folks who say, yeah, I really only talk to people using Instagram direct message features, that a long time ago, well, I don't know. I mean, Instagram hasn't been around since that long, but I think it launched in 2010. But maybe 5 years ago, I would have been like, that's so weird. Really? That's where you message everybody? But I can see, especially if you can, I mean, I have like countless contacts, but I really only talk to about 5 or 6 people on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And even, you know, some days, not even that many people. So it's like, if you're all in one place, that's the wave. It's not so much that Instagram DMs work better than another way to contact somebody, but, you know, sometimes I could see somebody's active. So I'm like, oh, you know, maybe this is a good way to catch their eye, you know, rather than wait for Discord later.
It does feel for me that Instagram is an alternative for most people. Like my sister will message me on Instagram, but usually she texts me. My friend Lamar messages me on Instagram. Usually he texts me. Signal, on the other hand, the people on Signal only use Signal. The people on Messenger seem to only use Messenger. So I don't know that Instagram Messages has taken the place of a messenger for people yet. It's like you say, it's just, I'm in Instagram and I saw you post and thought of you kind of a situation, I think.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they have an edit label because I can't type.
Well, I make mistakes all the time. And to be honest, unless, you know, you mentioned Facebook having this edit feature since the beginning, you know, unless there's a post that is like especially weird, you know, where I notice it's edited and I'm kind of like, okay, yeah, somebody went back and rethought some things. I don't even notice that.
Yeah.
And I also don't, you know, if it's a sentence and, you know, it fits the caption of the photo that was posted, it's like, cool, you edited. I don't know what you did. Who cares?
Yeah. Well, folks, if you would like to send us a poorly spelled, unedited message or a perfectly spelled, edited message, you can do so on multiple platforms. Direct message us on Threads. Send us a post on Instagram. We're at DTNSPix, DTNSPIX on both of those. We're Daily Tech News Show on TikTok, and we are DTNS Show on X and Mastodon. Come find us. Say hi.
Wesley Chang, an assistant professor of mechanical engineering and mechanics at Drexel University, has a really good explainer on the conversation about why electric vehicles, or EVs, don't charge as well in the cold. You might have heard that and you might have thought, well, but why? Go read it or use it to pass around to friends and family who also would like this explanation. It's well done. But Tom, you have decided to take on the task of explaining it even more briefly.
Yes. Let me short circuit his explanation. Get it? Liquid thickens in the cold is the thing you have to understand. Like, I'm not talking about water turning to ice. That of course happens, but other liquids get sluggish, right? They thicken up. They start to get a little slower. They don't flow as fast, even if they don't freeze. And most lithium ion batteries have a liquid electrolyte in them. This is why I'm like, go read Wesley Chang's explanation, because he's got more to it. But it made me understand that, like, that's the principle. That's the thing. That's why the cold affects the battery. The electrolyte is what carries ions from one side of the battery to the other. And when you're charging, it carries them to one side. When you use the battery to power the vehicle, it pulls them to the other side. And if the electrolyte is thick from the cold, they don't move as fast. The electrolyte doesn't move as fast. It slows things down. And so your charge doesn't happen as fast, and your discharge for powering the vehicle doesn't happen as fast.
Okay. Well, so if we understand what's going on here, what does Professor Chang suggest might be a solution?
Yeah.
How do we get it to, you know, not be so thick?
He has a few ideas that they are working on that, you know, he's an assistant professor, like you said. So he's part of a research team. They're working on some new materials. Some of them wouldn't even be lithium ions. Everybody's trying to find a replacement for lithium. So there's that. Also working on solid electrolytes. There's some progress being made with solid electrolytes for lithium ion batteries, which wouldn't suffer the slowing from the cold. You can also warm the battery to get it going. That's another thing that he suggests, is systems that just warm up the battery, just like you do with an old diesel engine to start it in the winter. Well, you warm it up, get that electrolyte loosened up, and then your battery works better. I can imagine there's a lot of people in cold climates, like, you know, Minnesota or Sweden, who are like, oh yeah, no, we've got car heaters for diesel engines. Have had them for years. Why not have them for electric vehicles too?
I mean, does that constitute anything different than just, like, letting the car run for a minute? I mean, I guess when you have an EV, that sounds like a sort of a silly term, right?
I don't know. That's a really good question. Because with a gas engine or a diesel engine, you are burning fuel. So there is heat being created in large quantities that you can use to warm up the engine. Right. I don't know with EVs if they warm fast enough to make that have a difference, or if you need to provide an electric heater in there. It's a very good question. But, you know, there's definitely a problem with them starting. If you can't get them started, you can't warm them up anyway. So you got to make sure that you get them loose enough to discharge enough electricity to get rolling in the first place.
Well, I guess everybody should just move to the tropics, and then we wouldn't have an issue.
That would be Sarah's suggestion to add to Professor
Chang. I'm kidding,
Chang.
Of course.
Yeah, just live somewhere warm, people. Come on. But yeah, this is, I think this, a lot of times I see people complaining or arguing about EVs, and there are downsides to EVs. There are differences with EVs. But what I like to see is when people are arguing in good faith and from a set of good assumptions. And so when I see someone say, well, EVs will never work in the cold, I dismiss that. I'm like, well, no, there's lots of people in cold weather using EVs. So that just isn't true. If, however, understanding this, you say, well, EVs work less well in cold weather, and we need better batteries, then that becomes a more productive discussion, because it's not, forget EVs, they don't work in the cold, because they do. It's, if you get an EV in the cold, you should be aware that you're going to run into this issue, you know, similar to having a diesel engine. And if you're reading about developments in battery tech, that might be something you keep an eye out for is, oh, that's a solid electrolyte. That would help the EV stuff. And maybe that makes you, you know, feel a little better about buying an EV in the future if you know that, oh, there's solid electrolyte batteries coming. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you're going to buy an EV?
Not right now. I have to pay off my car for the next 100 years.
Well,
first.
Sure. But let's just say if you didn't have to.
I would very much like an electric vehicle. If I felt like the car that I wanted and the price that I could offer for the car matched, I would do it tomorrow. That is not in the cards right now, but yes, I think they're great. I also don't drive that much. So the whole conversation about range, and I also don't live in a very cold climate. I mean, it is winter in Los Angeles, but it's not really that cold here. I don't think, I would be lucky enough to not be super affected by something like this, but yes, EV, you know, it's on a very distant horizon for me.
And Clinton points out that, older, less expensive EVs may not have heating or cooling elements to precondition the battery, but the newer ones do. So it's less of a problem in the newer ones. And that might be something if you're shopping for an EV, you want to keep an eye out for. All right, let's check out the mailbag.
All right. If you want to keep your smartphone charged up when you're traveling, and most of us do, it can be a little tricky. Sometimes, you know, it's like, where's the outlet? Or, you know, didn't bring the right cords with me. Chris Christensen has a tip for keeping it all topped off.
This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler with another Tech in Travel Minute. I don't know about you, but when I'm traveling, my smartphone, which for me is an iPhone, is getting a lot of use. It's my boarding pass, it's my directions, it's my entertainment through podcasts, and of course, it's my camera. I tend to take more pictures with it than with any other camera that I'm carrying with me, and that means that I'm going to run out of power. One thing that's part of my kit now is a MagSafe power bank that connects right onto the back of my phone, which also has a MagSafe case on it. So I don't have to carry around both a power bank and cables, and I can just quickly slap on a power bank and even put it right back in my pocket and recharge my phone and be ready for the next picture or the next boarding pass or the next podcast. I'm using a power bank from Eventronics, but a number of different manufacturers have them. Look for them. They're great. And this is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
Smart tip from Chris Christensen, as usual. Thank you, Chris. Steven wrote in about AI having a light bulb moment. We were talking about this with Nika yesterday and said, that made me think of a book I'm certain Tom has read, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Robert Heinlein. One of the main characters is called Mycroft Holmes, a computer that got so much processing power and additional workload over the years that he simply woke up. Definitely a light bulb moment, in my humble opinion. Really makes me want to start networking as much hardware as I can get my hands on. Steven, don't do it. Don't wake up Mycroft. We read Moon is a Harsh Mistress years ago for Sword and Laser, the Sword and Laser book club. And I remember the Mycroft character. I'd forgotten about the light bulb moment, though, until Stephen wrote in and mentioned that. So, yeah, we don't always have to make a Skynet reference. We could make a Mycroft Holmes reference.
Friend of mine has a dog named Mycroft, and I have not read this book, although I'm familiar with it. And I asked her today, is that what Mycroft is named after? And she was like, yes.
Yes, as a matter of fact.
The computer that woke up. Yeah.
Because Mycroft Holmes really is like also Sherlock's older brother in the Sherlock Holmes stories. Well, and Heinlein named the computer after the Mycroft from the Sherlock Holmes stories.
Well, she named it after the computer that was named after Sherlock Holmes' brother. So you see, it's all related.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. We also got a note from Venera writing in on Patreon who said, saw a video of a guy using his Apple Vision Pro to pay for stuff in stores. I'm still looking for the video, says Venera. And please send it if you find it. He was going around tapping his face in the card readers.
Wait, what?
If I had the cash, I'd love to try one, but I think my wife would kill me.
Does the Apple Vision Pro have NFC tap to pay in it? I didn't think it did.
I don't think so.
Then you need you need to try this out.
This is, yeah. I mean, yeah. I got nothing. I'm like, maybe he was taking photos, but of card readers, probably not.
Or is the shtick where he's just pretending, like, but I want to pay with my computer. You know?
Yeah, you see a lot of those videos floating around, and then someone who has a Vision Pro is like, you wouldn't even be able to make that gesture. Yeah, this person is just shining you on right now.
What? Yeah. I know you just had Apple Vision show yesterday, and you're talking about this a lot, but what are you using it for these days?
Media consumption.
Yeah. That seems to be the consensus, right?
Now, I did read a great article on Ars Technica yesterday about just, you know, someone who kind of took one for the team and said, I used it exclusively for work for a week. You know,
oh, right.
Here's
the
good, here's the good, here's the bad. What we're doing right this second, I don't know if that's possible. I mean, I could wear it and still read the screen in front of me, but I wouldn't really be using it to podcast. But I could do it for kind of everything else. I think I would find that frustrating because I just, you know, you know how it is. When you've got a vibe, you just, my keyboard, my trackpad, things are the way that I want them to be for work. But yeah, I think that's interesting. I don't really use it on a daily basis for anything besides just kind of like kick back and enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, but it's very enjoyable.
Yeah. And if the price comes down someday, that would be good enough for a lot of people, I think.
Exactly.
Patrons, stick around for the extended show, Good Day Internet. Someone was asking us recently what happened to NFTs, and we said we'd keep an eye out for new uses, and we found one. There are some NFTs being issued to get you into the Coachella Music Festival later this year, actually just coming up in a month or so. Is this a signal of the revival of NFTs as something not scammy? We will discuss whether it is or not.
We'll also remind you that you can catch our show live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC. We'd love to have you join us live if you can. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. And join us tomorrow. Scott Johnson is sharing his analysis on the new and upcoming partner games at Xbox's Wednesday announcement.
The DTNS family of podcasts. Helping each other understand.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Indeed, Diamond Club does hope you have enjoyed this program, as do I.
As do I.
OpenSea. Remember OpenSea? It's now the third largest NFT marketplace. It's trying to get back in the game, though, and it's teamed up with Avalanche, which has partnered with Coachella. So Avalanche is the blockchain. OpenSea is the place to purchase. And you can use your NFT to get into Coachella. Now, Sarah, I know you and I are going to participate in Coachella, where you stay home and watch Coachella on your television. But a lot of people like to go there. But when you go there, you need shade, you need drinks, you need VIP passes so that you don't have to wait in line. And the first of these NFT releases, which cost $1,499, mind you, but before you say, oh, NFT's gouging you again, that's probably what a VIP pass cost at Coachella, right? Like, for the whole weekend, like that seems, they're expensive. I know that. Like that's
I've only been to Coachella once, but I did get the VIP pass because I was told it's the only way to go. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember the price. This is also, I mean, 10 years ago.
Years ago, so. It would have been cheaper. Yeah. Right. But that to me sounds like, oh, that's a Coachella price, not an NFT price. Okay. With that VIP pass, you get access to the Oasis Lounge, like a, you know, a fancy special area to relax and unwind away from the heat and the crowd. You get complimentary drinks. It's not unlimited drinks, but you get free drinks. They also do some NFT stuff. They give you keepsakes that will unlock virtual experiences at the festival. So there's some virtual reality, augmented reality stuff, but also things that you save, which to me is like a ticket stub, right? It's like you don't get ticket stubs to save. A lot of people used to save their concert ticket stubs, and that would be a little collection. So this is the digital version of that. There are two more of these NFTs to be released later this month. More details on what's different about them is yet to come. And these only require an email address and a credit card. So remember back in the day when OpenSea was all about, you know, profile pictures and speculation, you had to open a wallet and connect a cryptocurrency. And a lot of people were like, yeah, I don't want to jump through all those hoops, even if I did want an NFT. Now you don't need to do that. You need an email address, credit card, buy your ticket. But the NFT part of it is just in the background to provide the technology so that you can make it easier to transfer, do these fun keepsakes and a few other things.
Yeah, I mean, whenever I hear like unlock a virtual experience at Coachella, I'm like, what is that? I don't know what that is, but I might be missing something. That said, this does feel like just a snappy, easy way to, I mean, you still have to go to a concert and be around like a million other people in the heat and the dust. But it feels relatively streamlined, you know? I think especially, certainly I have asked, and a lot of other people I know have asked themselves, like, what are we doing with the NFT stuff? You know, it's just about art, and sometimes not very great art, or just art that's speculative, that's supposed to be worth something, but no one really knows yet, kind of thing. That's, I think it gave the term NFT a bad name, because people were like, oh, this is just, you know, it's silly, or it's
get rich quick schemes. It's scammy. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And I mean, in many cases, that's what it was, but the technology was created for, I guess, stuff like this.
I mean,
this would be a good example of how this would be helpful.
NFT was created as a use of the blockchain. Like, we don't have to just do currencies. We could do non-fungible tokens. What could we use non-fungible tokens for? Well, at first it was art, but it doesn't have to be. It can be a lot of other things. And I like what you pointed out. Like, Coachella has a very art crossover. I mean, music is art, of course. I'm not trying to say it's not, but there's also physical art and displays and things that go along with it, mm-hmm. as well. So it does feel like this is kind of a natural crossover. Amos looked it up. Coachella VIP prices range from $1,069 to $1,399. So this is $100 more than the top level pass. Mm-hmm. So you're paying a tiny bit extra for the cachet of the NFT and the keepsakes and all of that. But I do think if this works, if we don't see horror stories about, oh, those NFTs, they crashed, they, you know, people had a problem getting them, you know, honored or whatever. This is the kind of thing that I could see taking off. I could see a Ticketmaster saying, oh, when you get a ticket, at this particular level, it's an NFT, and you can keep a collection of all your tickets in your Ticketmaster account. And you might not even hear them called NFTs, is kind of where I'm going. Like, they'll just be collections, digital collections that are a little more secure and can do a little more than just storing them in a database.
I think that's actually smart. I mean, not everyone's going to be like, NFT, hate that idea. But I think calling something a digital collection or similar,
yeah,
instead of NFT is just, it sounds less like either like, ooh, crypto bro, or
yeah.
ooh, too hard, or, you know, I don't have a, you know, I don't have the right wallet for this. It's just, something that you could buy.
That was the big thing, is they had to make it easy to get them. Like, having to connect a wallet, most people were not going to do that. So that's another big step here.
I mean, I still can't get into my MetaMask wallet.
Sad.
I mean, I'll figure it out. I kind of just, I don't have enough money in there
to make it worth the time.
It was like something where I was like, let's play with $50 and sort of move it around and see what happens, you know, just so I knew what everybody else was talking about. Actually, now that I think about it, when I went to Coachella, it was exactly 10 years ago. And it wasn't a VIP pass. It was a backstage pass.
Ooh.
And a friend of mine who sort of dragged me along with her, because I'm not a huge festival person. Mm-hmm. Too many people. I need to know where the exits are.
It's a lot of people.
You know? Yeah. And I don't like the idea of, if there's two artists playing at the same time and I like both, I have to choose one. Like, that's no fun. Yeah. I want to see both of them.
See, that's the fun of Coachella, is that you still have to choose which one to watch live, but you can go back and rewind and see the other one later.
Yeah. There's something, I don't know. It's exciting, and it's also, frustrating, I guess. But backstage passes, I thought, wow, like, are we just going to like hang out with Radiohead, you know, backstage? Like, how cool.
Kick back a couple of drinks.
It wasn't that. The VIP pass really is the way to go, just to have access to like toilets. You know, you have so many people with VIP passes that there's still lots of lines, but you have an area that's at least, I don't know, farther away from all the other people who don't have VIP passes. The backstage passes were weird. And maybe I was just there on an off year, but it's like you're just sort of walking around. It's sort of, it is behind the stage, back in the back of the stage, but it's like, I don't know, people's families just sort of like sitting there, like eating lunch, you know, somebody like polishing a guitar, you know, it wasn't like a party at all. It was like some sort of like, you know, a traveling show of some kind, you know, people coming in and out of trailers.
Yeah.
You know, and you just, you're walking around like, what am I, you know, like Pioneer Town here? Like, this is just a little strange. Yeah, I wouldn't do that again.
Backstage pass is...
Your mileage may vary.
Like, it sounds very practical. It sounds like something that if you're involved in the show, you need, but not much of a perk.
It didn't make sense.
Yeah.
I was like, why are we back here? It almost felt like... It felt a little... like the people back there were trying to get away from the show because they were involved in the production of the show on some level. And why are we staring at them?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
So it sounds like the backstage pass was not something you bought. It was just something your friend had an in and got you on the list for.
Yeah. Or, you know, or maybe we did. If it would have been like some crazy dollar amount, I just wouldn't have bought it. So I don't remember the exact details. She was more dialed in than I was. But yeah, it was just, I don't know. It's funny, the things that give people joy.
Yeah.
Know? The things that you're willing to pay for, you know, for a joyous experience, right? At face value, that's what you're going for. And we're all very different.
We watch Coachella pretty much every year. And this year, one of our favorite groups, Le Sserafim, is performing. So we sort of like minorly toyed with the idea of like, well, would we go? And I was like, okay, if we were to ever go to Coachella, which we're not, I would have to do it with one of those VIP packages, not just the VIP pass, but the package where you get the hotel, you get the shuttle that takes you from the hotel to the VIP area. You're in the shade. It's easy. That's the only way I would want to do it. I'm too old to be like fighting through the crowd and standing in a ton of lines and all of that. So,
yeah.
And that was prohibitively expensive, as we've been talking about. I'm like, well, you know, that's great. I'm not going to spend $1,400 or $1,300 plus the hotel. Right. And I don't think the NFT makes it that much different. I don't think that changes my approach. But it did make me think it through again, where I was like, you know, if I had too much money sitting in the bank and could afford it, would I do it? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I would. It'd be kind of fun to try it out and see if it's worth anything.
Yeah.
So if any of you are going to go to Coachella and you're like, oh yeah, I'm doing the VIP pass and you want to try these NFTs, let us know. We'd love to know how it goes.
Indeed. For anybody who's, I think most of you probably heard of Coachella, but if you're not familiar with the layout, it's in the desert. It's in Indio, which is a very small town outside of Palm Springs. So, you know, it truly in the Los Angeles, Southern California desert. And it's very beautiful there. You've got the mountains, palm trees everywhere, beautiful sunsets, but it's also very dusty, or can be. And the venue is huge. I mean, it really, just to walk, you know, from one side to the other a few times in a day is a lot of walking. And there's also, yeah, it's a whole hassle to like figure out like where are we staying. A lot of people do Airbnbs or, you know, figure out some sort of a guest rental. A lot of people camp. I mean, the campers, hats off to y'all, because I don't know. I mean, even if you pack all of the sanitary water that you could ever want to drink, it's like, I don't know, where's my bathroom? Is my toothbrush safe?
Yeah.
You know, do I have to build a moat around my tent so that I feel safe sleeping in the tent? But, you know, that's also fun. It's also sort of a young person's game, but I know people of all ages enjoy doing stuff like that.
Yeah, Coachella is not quite Burning Man, you know, where you're like out in the desert away from services, and you have to recreate an entire town's infrastructure in order to make it work.
Yeah, no, you can be at a grocery store, like a brisk walk away from the venue. But it is.
It's dusty. You know, it looks real dusty.
Yeah. It can. It definitely can be. And I don't know. You also just, you get, this is just, again, the old in me talking, but it's like people are on substances. And when people are on substances, then they're not very predictable. And I prefer people to be predictable when 5,000 of us are watching sure. Kendrick Lamar, you know, kind of thing. That's just a festival thing. That's not a Coachella thing. I think that's festivals true. In general, you know, sometimes I'm just sort of like, all right, I don't know how crazy people are going to be. So let's find the exit.
Just be careful. Hey, we got a YouTube super chat from Donald. Thank you, Donald. We never get super chats.
Thanks, Donald.
So, yeah, that's nice. Donald was saying some nice things in the chat about following us, rediscovering DTNS. Good to have you back. I hope you enjoy Coachella.
Yes, I do as well. I actually read an article, and it wasn't like yesterday or anything. It was maybe about a week ago that Coachella ticket sales had slowed compared to years previous. Ooh,
I wonder if that's one of the NFT reasons they're doing the NFT, drum up a little more interest too.
It might be, yeah. There's a whole thing. Coachella's always two weekends.
Yeah.
And there's a whole thing about like
April 12th and April 19th, the weekends.
Yeah. And it's like, what do you want to go to, the first weekend or the second weekend? And for whatever reason that I don't understand, like more celebrities are at the first weekend. So people want to get the first weekend tickets. So those usually sell out real quick.
Do you not understand why the celebrities go to the first weekend or why people want to be there when the celebrities are there?
I understand when people want to be, you know, rub shoulders with celebrities. Like, I get it. But I don't know why the first weekend. I guess it's just because it's just the first weekend.
Yeah. You know? You want to see it fresh.
Yeah, exactly. Like I was there first. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Well, you know, have fun in the desert, everybody.
Yeah. And if you get those NFTs, let us know. Let us know your favorite performance. Is it ATs? Is it Miss Monique? Is it Lil Yachty? Lil Yachty's at Coachella.
Yeah, I was not aware of who was headlining. Skepta, I like. Skepta's great.
And The Rose? Okay, I saw them at the Forum. They're good. Yao Sobi? Of course. I'm excited about Le Sserafim. So if you see Le Sserafim, take video for me. Send it back.
And that's an order.
So I know a lot of people were in chat going, why would you do that about the hybrid Frankenstein MacBook Air without a display, but then an iPad attached so you could use it with the Apple Vision Pro? I get it because I get that you want to have a really good keyboard to use with the Apple Vision Pro if you're going to use it that way, which this person is, right? So. Mm-hmm. So that could be a quest that you would go on. Also, this person makes good content, you know. So they're always trying to find mods and stuff. Federico Vitici is great at this stuff. But yeah, that's a real thing. It's like, okay, what's the best keyboard? And it's pretty crazy to realize, like, well, the best keyboard is actually the MacBook Air. And the way he wrote it, it was like, well, I was using the MacBook Air, and then I realized I don't need this display. I have a display. I have a big display with the Apple Vision Pro. So what if I just lightened the load on this? Because the Apple Vision Pro is not small. And if you can make things a little lighter, all you need is the keyboard and the mouse pad to use with the Apple Vision Pro. Why not just get rid of the display?
Yeah. When I used the Vision Pro with an external keyboard, it was my MacBook Air keyboard.
Yeah, yeah.
The screen on my MacBook Air, which I wasn't using, didn't seem like it was in the way, you know? Or you just, you know, I don't know, you fold it back.
Yeah.
It's, it didn't, it, at first I was sort of like, this is silly. But he does have a point, you know, or like, what's wrong with my magic trackpad kind of thing? Well, nothing exactly, but he's right that the trackpad and I have, I'm sorry, my magic keyboard and then my magic trackpad are two different items. Yeah. You know, they're not connected, but they are on the air. And actually the air is kind of my preferred setup just for doing quick stuff, you know, when I'm not on sitting here for the show. And yeah, if I didn't have a display on the air, then I would be sad.
Well, the Apple Vision Pro was his display. He's like, well, let's just get the display out of the way because it's just sitting there doing nothing. It's extra weight I don't need. Uh-huh. But then he was like, however, now that I've done that, I realize I've reduced the utility of the MacBook Air because now I can only use it with the Apple Vision Pro. What if I use the iPad? And that's where, to me, it starts to become genius, which is you've just created a MacBook with a removable screen. Right. It's yeah. Something that the Microsoft Surface was years ago already. There's lots of versions of this now in the Windows world. The thing that Viticci did that was really, really cool is he created a lovely little mount. Like, you know, that's something that I wouldn't be able to do, is to create the mount that makes it easy to snap the iPad on there and off. But yeah, with universal control and sidecar, why not? And then you've got the best of both worlds. I don't know. It made a lot of sense to me. I don't think it's practical. I don't think it's something like, and now everyone should do it. But I follow the logic, right?
If you don't mind taking apart, I mean, clearly he's got some Apple gadgets laying around. Mm. You know, taking apart a MacBook Air for right. No reason.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah.
No one would do that. Why would you do that? But if you're like, well, I'm going to use the Vision Pro pretty regularly, I really like, you know, half of this MacBook Air for that reason. But the rest of the time, well, now what am I, you know, where my display go? And now you've kind of got this convertible option of iPad Air or iPad Air that is a laptop. Looks like a laptop. And yes, there's some precision involved here, right? You can't just like rip off a display from an Air and make it look cool. Which is why before I saw the photos, I was like, this is mayhem.
It's madness, I tell you, madness.
And then I'm like, oh, that actually looks really nice. Yeah. It's cool.
Yeah, it's you do it because you can kind of project, which I always have respect for. Sometimes those kinds of projects lead to something down the road. Maybe they'll inspire something that's more practical. I love the idea. Like, what if Apple came out with a version of the MacBook keyboard and trackpad with limited internals that you could use with the Apple Vision Pro and iPad, right? Like, that'd be kind of cool. Because you don't need it to have powerful internals to do what he's using it for. Your internals are coming from the Pro.
Just need a keyboard, trackpad.
Wi-Fi, you know, so you can connect to the iPad. So minimal, like an M1 would be good enough. Wouldn't have to be the latest processor. I don't think you even need a graphics card.
That.
Yeah. Well, you would need a processor to handle sending it to the iPad when you're not.
Yeah, but that's not super tasking.
No, no. But
an M1 seems
I only
overkill.
Said M1 because that's the cheapest, simplest one they've got now. I guess they could use an A processor. You're right. I hadn't thought about that. Doesn't even have to be a laptop processor.
Really, what it just says is they need to make a keyboard trackpad accessory for the...
All-in-one. Instead of making them separate. Make it thin. But the key was that when he was able to connect the iPad to it and use it without the Apple Vision Pro, I thought that was kind of compelling too.
I like it.
It's fun.
It's cool.
I like hacks. Hacks are fun.
Me too. Yeah. Eileen and I on yesterday's Apple Vision show talked about this. Well, it's not really a hack, but it was sort of just a design to do it for fun. A guy who made a sort of a protective case, I guess you'd call it, for the Vision Pro. And it's like a stylistic thing, but doesn't cover any cameras or sensors. So it's somewhat weird looking, but also sort of futuristic looking, uh-huh. as if the as if the Vision Pro is already
right, sort of futuristic, not old fashioned like the Apple Vision Pro.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it was funny because it got shared around the internet, and of course, it's like the first comment is from someone being like, "Oh, great. You know, it's just going to make it even heavier now." And it's like, well, let the guy live.
Yeah, seriously.
He did something fun and artsy and wants to share it with you. Just say good job.
There's,
you
know? It's his neck that's at risk.
But you know why you say negative things like that? Because it made you remember it. Do you remember all the positive comments about it? No, nobody does.
No.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's why people say all the negative stuff, because they're like, people pay attention.
Listen to me.
Yeah.
This Cheerios, it's all O's.
It's
where the letters.
It's more fun to hate than to love.
Yeah, you know, really, for me, it's all context.
when you prefer to hate versus love, it's more context.
Over love. Yeah. I would hate to be at a dinner where I hate the food because I'm miserable. But if I would love to love the food. You know, like. Because that means I'm eating something I really want to eat. Oh, I'm so hungry right now.
Why are you so hungry? Did you not eat lunch?
Because I just mentioned eating. And now
but did
I
you
eat
lunch?
Again.
Sometimes
I ate something.
Just talking about food.
You didn't. You aren't satisfied by your lunch.
I ate muffins. Not like bakery muffins, but like English muffins.
Oh, okay. Oh. I was thinking like Sarah, like that you ate like six blueberry muffins or something.
Oh, man.
Atkins diet, go away.
Now, what did you put on your English muffins? That makes all the difference.
Yeah.
Butter.
Mm-hmm. Just butter?
Butter's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why you're hungry. You need some protein. Butter has some protein.
Maybe add a little scrambled egg.
Yeah. Well, Canadian bacon.
Look at you two bougie eggs.
Some avocado.
Why is that
even
bougie? Avocado. Avocado English muffins are not bougie. Avocado toast, bougie.
Listen, it's a rare day when I don't have at least a partial avocado in my kitchen.
Really? Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, I wouldn't say I eat an entire avocado a day, but...
We buy avocados and then we have alarms go off. We're like, we must eat it today or it's going bad. Hurry, figure it out.
Well, I'm like, especially on the weekend when you have time to make like kind of a bigger breakfast, it's like, I don't have any avocados. Sucks.
Well, this is the thing Tom brings that I think Tom is on the nose at. Like, avocados are good up to a point, but when they're, even if they're a little overripe, they're like, they taste like cellophane tape. Like, it's just not good.
Stop eating cellophane tape. Gosh.
That's why I don't.
He tasted it for science. He wanted to see if it tasted the same, and it did. Thank you for your service.
Worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why.
Thank
you for not saying scotch tape. I noticed that. Cellophane tape. You're like, it's
scotch
not a brand.
Tape is a brand name.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
That's why I always say nasal tissue instead of Kleenex.
I just say
tissue paper and be like normal folks.
I've never thought an avocado tasted like tape, but yeah, if it's overripe, it's no good anymore. But if it's underripe, it's no good either. You got to know what you're doing. Some people either don't
avocados
live
are too much pressure.
Avocados.
You can only buy a few. You can't buy them like bananas. You can't
stressful.
Buy a bunch of avocados.
I don't know. Is it too ripe? Is it not ripe? I can't take it anymore.
Well, and when you pick them, you can't pick them when they're ripe because you need to eat them right when they get home.
Exactly. So if you're not like going straight from the grocery store to like a big salad, it's like you don't want it to be too ripe because that really is too much pressure. It's
I
like
think I was talking to Lamar right about this. There was a grocery store where they had a bin of ripe avocados for like super cheap, right? And we were like, how does that work? Like, do they just, you know,
they're just trying to get rid of them?
Is that it? Or because he's like, they're always there. There's always a full bin of ripe avocados at the beginning of the day. It's like, do they make it through the day? Do they have to empty that bin every day? There were so many mysteries.
They probably keep it through the day. And then at the end of the day, they'll...
He's like, but it's always full.
Maybe the bin is shallower than he thinks. Like, it's, does it go all the way down?
It's a fake bin.
You know, that's not a bad call.
There's no bin at all. In
fact. Like, it's, you could do that where you like make it look like it's full and it's like, actually, there's just one row of avocados.
Yeah.
You definitely go back to Lamar and be like, Roger thinks you just think the bin is bigger than it is.
He's like, tell Roger.
He'll love it.
Yeah. And then he finds out, then we find out that's exactly
gonna,
what it
is. He's going to mail me a case of these ripe avocados. And I got to.
Well, you know, this is actually, you know, fruit being either not ripe enough or too ripe is one of the issues I have with bananas. I love a good banana.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to eat a banana every day, but mm-hmm. I like having them around.
Oh.
And once they go, it's like, I can put them in banana bread and that's pretty much it. But like, I'm not eating banana bread that much. During the pandemic, oh boy, once a week, I'm baking up a storm. Now I'm like, eh, once every few months, maybe I want banana bread.
Yeah.
But not, you know.
But make it and then freeze it. And then you can thaw it out when you want. That's
pretty soon your freezer is just all banana bread.
But then.
It's not a terrible idea.
But then guess what? You have Christmas. Well, that or you have Christmas gifts. Like, you just send them out. Like, you don't like fruitcake?
Great. They're already frozen. By the time they get there, they'll have thawed out. It's perfect.
Yeah, be perfect. It's like a gold belly, except from Sarah. So Sarah belly.
It's Sarah belly. Yeah.
I don't think I'm that good at banana bread that I would actually send someone a loaf of my banana bread for Christmas.
It's about the
thought. I think it's perfectly fine, but it's not like special. Yeah, it's true. Hey, you know.
I mean, we don't send them our own. Nice, we don't send people like greeting cards that we make ourselves from construction paper and little, you know, glued on stickers. That's, I mean, true. My kids
well,
do.
Some people do.
But I don't.
Yeah.
Now listen, I know I just said it's a thought that counts, but really it's the money that counts. So thank you to Ed and Henry for giving us a raise, because
thank you, Ed and Henry.
Ed and Henry, you are our heroes today for finding a little extra value. We're working hard over here to give you value. We don't want money for nothing, but we appreciate that Ed and Henry were able to do that for us and, you know, pick up a few others out there. Thank you, Ed, and thank you, Henry. Also, big thanks to Donald again for the super chat, which also helps us pay for the show. Everybody is amazing. We will be back tomorrow with Scott Johnson. Until then, everybody, have a good one.
Good day,
have
Internet.
A good day.
And a just pleasant one. Tomorrow.
Don't be greedy.